or start grinning because anywhere to look.
They don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday. Yeah.
Morning, Chris.
Morning, Sean.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Mackenzie.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Mackenzie. There's three of us this morning on the Chivalrous Guys.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks in a row, three of us. We've got a guest today, which is amazing. We're so happy to welcome Mackenzie to our podcast, The Chivalrous Guys. It was a quick kind of 24-hour turnaround for Mackenzie. I brought it up with him yesterday, and here he is at 7:30 in the morning, which is wonderful. We're super grateful to have you here on our show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very generous of you to come that quickly on the show and come on that early. It's not quite as early for me. I'm on the East Coast, so it's actually 8:30 my time down here. So
okay.
Yeah. Not quite as bad. Chris, I'm gonna let you kind of take the lead and maybe talk about what we're here to discuss with our friend Mackenzie. And I know you always give us our definition, so I'll let you kind of go with that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sean. I met Mackenzie about 11 months ago when I got into my kind of second round of sobriety. We met in Newmarket. I don't mind saying that. Newmarket at Cornerstone. He was a presence there. I've met him at many different meetings. He's shared his stories with me and with others. I have always enjoyed listening to him and listening to his experiences. We welcome him today. He ran the LGBTQI+, if we can go with that, meetings at Cornerstone. And we've invited him to the show today to discuss his journey, discuss, you know, some of the hurdles that he's experienced in his journey as a gay man. We had a conversation with him before, and you know, Sean and I, we talked about it a little bit before as well. We are just trying to advocate for acceptance, understanding, curiousness, love, you know, the things that connect people.
Yeah.
And look, we've acknowledged this on previous podcasts. We're two 50 plus guys that grew up in small communities. We don't have a lot of experience, you know, with gay and lesbian, with LGBTQ. We're not pretending that we do. We are not very woke, but we want to at least, you know, learn and grow as we can every day. And so, we talked a bit with Mackenzie prior to pressing record here, and we're just super grateful that you're willing to share your experience with us and just talk about you know, your journey, and you know, hopefully provide just some examples of the way life goes and the you know, the way you've kind of move through life and just some of the highs and lows and the experiences that you've had in your journey in life. So I think if we can, I mean, I had a few questions for you prior to, but we'd just like to maybe talk about maybe the first part of your life, maybe where you grew up, what your family was like, your experiences in when you began to realize that you were gay and when you came out and how that all looked. And we would really appreciate just listening to your story.
Amazing.
Sorry.
To kind of start off, I just want to say, like, thank you guys for being allies in this. You say that you're 50-something-year-old guys who grew up in small towns and don't know any better and are not woke, but being an ally is all about, like, it's a verb. It's about active listening and showing respect. And so this really shows that you guys are allies to the LGBT community in just simply hearing my voice, hearing my story. So thank you for inviting me.
Well, you humbled me just saying that. That's amazing. Thank you. Chris, do you want to give us our definitions?
Oh, yes, of course I will. Yes. Yes, I will. So I'm going to start with the definition of gay.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt one more time. Are these like Webster's Dictionary? Is that where you get them? The Webster's Dictionary, like sort of like what the Webster's definition is.
I do, and you know, they tend to lead to other things, but I usually start with the Webster Dictionary. Okay. That's what this one is. So it's an adjective, sexual, and then the definition is sexually or romantically attracted to people of one's own sex. And gay is of course, well, as we know, as I know, is used especially for men. Lesbian tends to be the term for women. The other part that I love, it says dated, but lighthearted and carefree. Isn't that a beautiful thing, you know, to be lighthearted and carefree? Wouldn't we all love to be more lighthearted and carefree? The legal definition of gay is used to describe persons, specifically men, who are romantically or sexually attracted to persons of the same sex. It goes on, as an adjective meaning cheerful or carefree, that acquired an association, and I don't love this part, but we'll move through it, with loose morals and sexual licentiousness.
Quite the definition.
You don't hear that word every day.
That sounds insulting and confusing. I don't know.
So
that's licentiousness.
So I had to go on and then define licentiousness.
Yes, please.
I don't believe I've ever heard that word. So, and as an English major, that's anyway. Licentiousness is promiscuous and unprincipled in sexual matters.
That's awful.
It is, but it goes on as the archaic definition is disregarding accepted rules or conventions. So I actually like that part, because what are accepted rules exactly, and why do we have to conform to an accepted rule?
Who wrote the rules?
And when?
Yeah.
The reality is accepted rules change all the time.
All the time.
So I love that part because we don't have to.
And who wrote them and who accepted them? Like, you know, exactly. Like there's a lot of questions in that. It's amazing that's in the dictionary though, eh?
Isn't it?
At least it said archaic. At least it's kind of admitting that it's a very archaic definition of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that the way that kind of metamorphosized into something that we can either accept as some archaic definition, or we can move past and.
But gay, there was also a definition there. Gay is also like, there's a song that says happy and gay. It's a different definition of the word, right? It just means happy. I don't think it has anything to do with the sexual orientation of the word. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Lighthearted and carefree though. Let's focus on that. I love that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our whole podcast. Thanks for coming on, Mackenzie. Chris and I have gabbed through the whole thing. All right, let's listen to our esteemed guest. I'd like to hear from him, Chris. So have you got a question, or you'd like to just talk, Mackenzie, and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Feel free to pipe up anytime that you have any questions or need clarification on anything. And I'll just kind of tell my story.
Yeah,
please.
Awesome. So I'm 32. And I grew up in Belleville, Ontario. It's a town kind of on the 401, just a transient town. There's about under 50,000 people when I was growing up there. I was born in Guelph, moved after my parents got divorced. I moved to Belleville with my mom and my two sisters. So we were growing up. I had a pretty decent childhood, not gonna lie. Like obviously there were some things that could have been improved, but I mean that's everybody's childhood. I didn't really have an idea about my sexuality for many years. It was probably around 10 or 11 where I started to get an idea of sexuality. And I was starting to see men more in a fawning way than I was women. And I wasn't, like when we were watching movies or whatnot, I never really connected with those kissing scenes or those sex scenes or whatnot. I was like, why are we watching this? Like, I never felt that connection to it. It was just kind of something that was on the TV or on the movies. I remember watching Top Gun when I was a teenager, and there's a sex scene in there, and everybody else is like oohing and awing and fawning over it. And I'm like, what's happening? Like, why are we watching this? Like, and it wasn't until I'm a child of the internet. Like, we got the internet when I was, I don't know, grade 3 or 4. We got the dial-up internet. And with the internet, there has been always this kind of underlying theme of porn's free. You can
Course.
go and you can look at lewd material. And yes, I was under the age of 18 before I consumed that, but who, whatever. And so I remember watching porn for the first time and seeing the people, the actors, and then I saw like the men, and I was just like, in my head I was just like, oh, like what if I was to like watch a video of like two men, like is that out there? And so I googled that, and then I told my friend about it when I went to school, because like him and I would always gossip about those kinds of things, and he was like, oh my God, that's gay. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean gay? What's gay? What's happening here? And I had no idea that like that was, but just the reaction that I got from him, that visceral, ew, oh my God. Like, that was enough for me to shove it down, to know that I couldn't talk about this. Because I got a visceral reaction from one of my best friends. It was oh okay, we don't talk about that. And so flash forward a few years, I'm kind of like a teenager at this point, like 12, 13, 14, and I dated a couple women. Like one, we just kind of like held hands and went to the movies because we were teenagers. Other one, we watched, what was it, Nightmare Before Christmas, and made out, and I never really felt anything. And spoiler, both of them are lesbians now, so it just happened to go that way. But with the act of kind of shoving down my sexuality, it came with a lot of inner turmoil. And when puberty hit, being in high school, being in that environment with kind of the social pressures of pushing that down and hiding it from myself and hiding it from others, I started engaging in self-harm, which is something that's pretty prevalent in the queer community when it comes to teenagers, is self-harm, because it's, I don't know how to feel, and this is the only thing that is going to make me feel. And so that landed me in the psych ward a couple of times because my mother didn't know what to do with me. I was constantly acting out. I was self-harming. It was a pretty dark time, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it was puberty, like the beginning parts of puberty were some of the hardest years of my life, and I'm happy that I survived. Because there's a lot of people who don't, like suicide rates and like accidental or on purpose, drug rates, sex trafficking rates, all of those things are so much higher in the queer community, in the LGBT community, than in the heterosexual community. And it's simply because, like you were saying, like who writes the rules when we're talking about the definition? Well, the people who write the rules are the people who are at that top of the pyramid of privilege. And that's white straight men, white straight women.
Yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
it's not people of color. It's not queer people. It's not trans people. It's not. And I know that I'm a white man. I get that. I have privilege because of that. But I'm one rung lower on that kind of pyramid of privilege because I'm gay. I don't get access to society in the same way that straight men do. And it was through connecting with a community that allowed me to kind of come to terms and accept myself. And there's a gay youth group, a queer youth group in Belleville called Say Out Loud. And they've been running their youth group. I started joining it in 2008, and it's still running to this day. And it's Tuesday nights. When I was doing it, it was happening in the basement of a church on Tuesdays, and it was great. We would sit around in a circle, talk about the difficulties of life, and then we would all go to the mall. And so it was like dozens and dozens of these queer teenagers would go to the mall and hang out on a Tuesday night. And it was just kind of this routine that we had. And it shows a lot of parallel to other fellowships that I'm a part of now, of like that community focus being able to like heal us and give ourselves acceptance. And so I was about 15 when I went to Say Out Loud the first time. And the people there really allowed me to gain acceptance with myself. And my friends that I made there, some of them I'm still friends to this day, and I've been in their weddings, and I've lived with them over the years, and we've haven't spoken for years. And when we connect, it's like no time has passed at all. And it was such a profound experience to have a group of people who could also say like, oh yeah, me too. Like, these are the feelings that I have. This is how I got through it. And
Did you lose your other friends? Like that friend you that kind of went ew to you and that, did you stop being friends with those people or did they stop being friends with you?
not, I don't think, not because of my sexuality, but because what also came of this youth group was they showed me about like the rave community. And so like raving has a high LGBT population because it's raving is all based on love and acceptance and peace and unity and respect. And but on the other side of that, it fosters a lot of drug use. And so my drug use, I think, is what took me away from my friends from like primary school and secondary school, because I was now hanging out with all the kind of like, I don't know, the queer drug addicts, basically. And they didn't want to have anything to do with me, and I didn't want to have anything to do with them. And so slowly over the years, I did lose touch with all of my friends from those younger years. And that's okay.
I think most of us do. I mean,
Yeah.
for one reason or the other, right? So I'm still friends with my first friend from grade two, but I think that's a pretty unique situation. You know, I don't think that happens a lot. So I'm going to interrupt you one more time. What
Okay.
exactly is a rave?
A rave. Oh, it's just techno music in a grungy warehouse with lasers and lights and dancing and crazy outfits
Okay.
and makeup and glitter. And it's just little like it's like underage parties for people who like can't get into clubs. Usually raves are 16 plus. They're not 18, 19 plus. And so raves are kind of like in a discreet location, loud techno music, lots of drugs. Like it's, yeah,
So
it's that kind of environment.
illegal for the lack of a better term, like
There's no, generally, like the ones
there's
that I was
no.
going to, they didn't have any alcohol being sold.
Oh,
And
okay.
so that's how they got away with having 16 plus. Or if the events did have alcohol being sold, you needed a bracelet or a mark on your hand or something. But I wasn't there for the alcohol. I was there for the drugs, and I was there for like the drag shows and like, because it was like a rave, and then there was like local drag that would like come in, and like every couple hours they'd do a drag show, and it was a really great experience to like show me all of the different flavors of sexuality. I got to meet lesbians, I got to meet trans people, I got to meet non-binary people, I got to meet drag queens, and it was amazing. And like, and it happened through the summers, it was like every Friday or every Saturday. And then like throughout the year, it was kind of like once or twice a month. And so these events were happening pretty frequently. And for Belleville, there was hundreds of these teenagers that would go to these events. And the vast majority of them were queer, were part of the LGBT community. And so it was a great way for us to network and meet other teenagers that were part of the community. And it was through those events and through that youth group that I talked about, Say Out Loud, it was through that community that I truly became like, I truly accepted me for who I am. And that allowed me to identify as a gay man and to gain acceptance with that and be okay with that. And but it wasn't all great. Like I got bullied out of my first high school because of homophobia. And so it was kind of like there was a situation that happened, and the student body kind of flipped on accepting gay people, and I was kind of the target of that, unfortunately. And so I got bullied out of my first high school. And so it was quite dramatic. I needed to like leave right away. So these people that I was friends with, since grade, I think I started going to that school in grade 4, to grade 10, like all of those relationships instantly severed, and I needed to change schools. And so I went to another school. I decided to go to the arts high school in Belleville. And that was great because there was a queer community there. There was a lot of theater kids there. There was a lot of music kids there. And like I was a music kid in high school. And so I got to hang out with a lot of the kind of the art school kids, and that worked out well until I decided to continue to prioritize my drug use. And I continued to prioritize and continued to prioritize it, and on, until grade 12. It was like a couple months before graduation, and I ended up getting expelled. And that's that. And so I then moved up to Ottawa because both of my sisters were both older than me, 2 and 4 years older. Both of them moved up to Ottawa, one to go to University of Ottawa, the other one to go to Carleton University. And I got kicked out of my house, and I was expelled from school. I'd been living on my own for about a year at that point, because I got kicked out when I was like 16.
Was that
And
because of
so
drugs or because of your sexuality?
a little bit of both. My mom wasn't super accepting of my sexuality until I was like 17 or 18. Her breaking point, actually, for her to come to acceptance, and I love this, and you know what, bless her, but like her moment of acceptance for my sexuality was watching Brokeback Mountain. And like, that's, to me, it's a good movie, but it's like two straight men playing two gay men and like having unprotected sex after eating a can of beans in a tent. Like, it's not the most romantic thing in the world, and it doesn't have a happy ending or anything like that. But for her, it was like, oh my God, love is love. And I'm like, sure. Well, thank you. Yes, I've been
Whatever
telling
gets
you
you
this
there.
for years, but sure,
That's
thank
what it's
you.
set for, then yeah, there you go.
If that's what works for you, that's
Takes
what works for
Heath
you.
Ledger, I guess that's what it takes, you know.
Right? You know what? And she has been great ever since. But yeah, she yeah, that was one of the times where I went to the psych ward. It was because I came out to my mother, and she drove me to the psych ward. And so it wasn't the greatest, most
You came out
accepting
to your
household.
mother and she took you to the psych ward.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of self-harm going on at that point, and I finally broke down to her on why I was like harming myself. It was because of my sexuality, and And then I went on like a field trip. And then when she picked me up from the field trip, she said, "Do you want to go for ice cream?" And I said, "Sure." And then we got on the highway and we drove to Kingston and went to Hotel Dew, which is a it has a children's psych ward in it, and whoop, in there for a few weeks. And so I didn't eat ice cream for like a decade.
I was
I
gonna say,
was
you must have been thinking,
ice
did
cream.
haven't we passed 15 ice cream places already? How good's this ice cream in Kingston?
Yeah, I was really confused on where we were going. But reflecting back up at my time in the psych ward, there was one nurse. His name was Troy, and he never mentioned his sexuality to me. But I think he might have been the first like openly gay, like adult that I knew, because I always like reflect back on him. He really stuck into my memory as somebody who I connected with, and
You must have been scared to death, weren't you? Like
oh,
oh,
absolutely,
yeah, that
and.
sounds frighteningly horrific to be dropped off by your mom, and like it breaks my heart. I would have been scared to death. I don't think I could have taken that.
Absolutely. And like there's and I met some people who definitely should have been in the psych ward, and I learned a lot about mental health while I was in there from the other patients. Because the children's psych ward is not really like you're just kind of left around. You don't they feed you, you get to meet with a therapist like once a day, once a week maybe, depending on their availability. Like they don't really do too many groups or anything. Like I just like kind of sat around and we just kind of shared war stories between each other. And like there were people in there for eating disorders and schizophrenia and suicide. And I don't know. It didn't really, it
So
wasn't.
there wasn't a lot of therapy involved. It was almost like, okay, we'll just send Mackenzie off to this place and hopefully he'll sort himself out somehow.
It felt more like it was stabilization than
Right.
therapy or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went into that psych ward twice. Yeah, once for 3 weeks and once for 4 weeks. But yeah, my mother and I were always kind of like at odds. But
Was your dad in
yeah.
your life?
No, my mom and dad divorced when I was a kid, and so for many years in my childhood, I saw my dad like every other weekend, and saw him during the summertime. But like, he would get us for like 2 weeks during the summer, but he would like ship me off to Bible camp, and so,
Hit you for 2 weeks, then ship you off. That's real.
yeah.
I won't
So I mean, Bible camp was great. It was in
Yeah, I
Wasaga
went to
Beach,
Bible
and
camp.
like I got to go water skiing and play in the forest, and I had a lot of fun. But I, anyway, no, I didn't really have a super great relationship with my dad growing up, and sexuality was not really anything that I talked about with him. And also, like with my grandparents on my mother's side, like my grandfather, he was the chaplain for the Trenton Air Base, and he had a doctorate in divinity, and he was an officer in the military, and I never talked to him about my sexuality. It was just something that was just, we're not going to talk about that. I knew that he loved me. We're just not going to talk about that. He even met my partners. Like he met two people that I dated for multiple years, and both of them, he was like, "Oh, is this your roommate?" I was like, "Yes, Grandpa, this is my roommate.
Sure.
we don't need to talk about it."
Probably do, though.
I kind of wish that I had talked about it, but I wouldn't have changed anything, honestly, with my grandparents. They were fair, like they had unconditional love for me, and they always showed it.
Nice.
But
Yeah.
yeah, so when I was 17, I moved up to Ottawa, and I moved in with my sister, and I told myself, I was like, okay, no more drugs, no more partying. I'm gonna be a better person. I just need to like finish high school and like go to university or college or whatnot. And then like
And you
3 days
never took
later,
drugs again.
yeah.
You said
And then like 3 days later, I was just
that a
like,
couple times too.
yeah. About 3 days later, I said, "Oh, well, I don't know how to make friends. Like, how do you make friends? Like, I don't know anybody here, and I don't want to be bugging my sister constantly. How do you make friends?" And so I went to a rave. and the cycle continued. And so basically, I was now in a big city with minimal supervision, a rampant drug addiction, and a bigger party scene. And my life spiraled. I was having dangerous sex. I was very promiscuous. I was doing a lot of drugs. I was going to a lot of parties. And my life kind of like spiraled over the next couple of years until I landed in my first rehab center. And I went to Dave Smith Youth Treatment Center, which is a youth treatment center just outside Ottawa. And so I went there for 3 months, and it got me off the needles. It got me off the hard drugs. It kind of, I got my body weight back up. And that was good. It didn't get me sober, because when I, the last week that I was in that treatment center, my therapist was like, "What are you going to do when you get out?" And I was like, "Well, I turned 19 in here, so I'm going to buy a bottle of wine and a pack of cigarettes." And she was like, "Well, aren't you afraid of cross addiction?" I'm like, "No, I never drank. I turned 19 now. I was always like doing drugs. Like, I barely drank. I had like a couple coolers over the years, but like never drank, so it's not going to be a problem." Spoiler, it was a problem. Anyway, so I then spent the next kind of like 9.5 years drinking and smoking weed. And but before I went to that treatment center, I started running out of money. So I lost my job. I got kicked out of my sister's place. I was experiencing homelessness. And I started engaging in sex work just to kind of get by, which is something that a lot of homeless, gay, queer youth do. Upwards of 25% of homeless queer youth engage in sex work. And it's a pretty staggering number, but it's something that
Pretty awful.
had to do to kind of get by. And when I went to rehab, that ended, and I kind of closed the door on that for the time being. And the next kind of 9.5 years of my life were relatively normal and really great. I had a couple really great long-term relationships. Like, I dated somebody for 3 years, took a couple year break, and then I dated a gentleman for 5 years, and we were on the path of getting married. Like, I had the engagement ring, we had the nice place with the picket fence, and we got a cat together, and we both were lifting each other up through our careers, and we were really boring. Like, we were just a boring couple. And it was great because it was like with him, and in that household, like, it was us and our roommate who was also gay. And so it was three gay men just living in this townhouse together. And it was so like freeing and wonderful, because it was like we all liked the same things. We all engaged in the same media. We all listened to the same music. We could just be unapologetically gay, like at home, with no repercussions, no judgment, nothing. And it was great to kind of have a living situation with other gay men, because it was like, this is what normal feels like. I feel like this is how I can be authentically myself. And it was great for the time that it was. And then COVID hit, and my ex and I, we were working together 24/7, like from our bedroom. And I just, our relate some relationships got stronger through COVID. Ours crumbled, absolutely crumbled. And so I moved out. I wanted to break up before the kind of disdain set in. And so I moved out, and I got a little bachelor apartment downtown Ottawa, right on Rideau Street, and started kind of engaging in my like bachelor life. I was like working from home. I had a nice corporate job, and my house was kind of a revolving door of men. And that's when drugs started coming back into my life again. And that's when I started using meth. And yeah, I remember taking that first hit of meth, and it was like a PSA from the 90s. It was like, "Meth, not even once." Like, and I kind of like took that first hit, and it just, when I exhaled, I was like, "Okay, like this is going to be a problem." And it was a big problem. I started using every day, and then I started engaging in sex work again because I was like, if I'm going to be having all of this sex, if I'm going to be this promiscuous, I might as well be making money off of it. And so I started engaging in sex again, sex work again, and it was a fun lifestyle. I'm not going to lie, it was completely self-destructive, but I had lots of money. I had my own place. It was a beautiful historic building. I could like see Parliament from my fire escape balcony. Like, it was awesome until it wasn't. And I started having like hallucinations and psychosis and all of that. And then I ended up having to move in with my father in Bradford, and that's where I live now. And so I called my dad from detox and I said, hey, like I need help. And he offered to let me move in. And so I now live with family. And coming to this part of Ontario, I ended up going to another treatment center. And when I went, before I got in there, they warned me, like the director of the program warned me that like there's a lot of like straight trades working men who go to this treatment center. Like, are you going to be okay with that? And I was like, I want to get sober, like whatever it takes, like it'll be fine. Like, not realizing that like a lot of these men that I was interacting with in the treatment center had never interacted with a gay man at all, ever in their life. And I think kind of like my favorite experience of that was, it was like springtime and I had like oven mitts on and a apron on, and I was like making cookies, and I was like just kind of laughing and joking around. And then I kind of looked over at like all of the guys just like standing there in their jeans and t-shirt, and I'm there in like little booty shorts and an apron, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't think I've ever spent this much time around straight men. And one of them was just like, yeah, same. Like, and it was in that moment that I was like, oh my God, like these are the people that like I'm becoming friends with these people. But I, ever since I moved to Ottawa, if it wasn't for work or for school, like I didn't engage with straight people. I just didn't. I didn't want to. I didn't feel the need to. I didn't feel connected to them. I didn't have any straight male friends. Like, I just, it wasn't my vibe. And then to be living in a house of them for 3 months, it was a really eye-opening experience. And there was one person in like specific who was very right-wing, very conservative, very religious, that I was in the house with, and we connected the most. Him and I had this mutual respect for each other that we could learn from each other, and we gave each other space to actively listen to each other about our perspectives on religion, on sexuality, on gender identity. And him and I are friends to this day, and it's great. And I've been sober for 2.5 years now, and we still
Wow.
talk all the time. Thank you.
Congrats on that. 2.5 years.
Yeah. And so him and I still talk all the time. And then when I got out, I realized that there was a vacuum in the community in York Region. And so I wanted to relive that experience of that youth group that I went to back in 2008. And so I started up the LGBTQIA2 plus 12-step book study that was happening on Tuesdays. And
You started that?
yes, I started that when I got out of treatment.
Fantastic.
And it ran for about 2 years, and it was a really great experience to kind of create a safe space for people. And to teach people about pronouns and to allow people to share how not only drugs and alcohol have affected their life, but how sexuality and gender identity has affected their life in tandem with addiction. And so it's a great experience. And now I spend my time just kind of being around a lot more straight people, and I'm willing to be that person that people ask like the questions to that they don't know the answers to. Like when I was working at the wellness center, I put up posters for the LGBT meeting, and there was a group of guys that were standing around laughing at that poster. And like, because there's a rainbow poster and they were laughing at it. And so I could have easily engaged in cancel culture and been like, hey, no, that's homophobic. Stop that. Go away. Or I could do what I did and say, do you have any questions about it? Like, what about this is funny? Why are you laughing at this? And they were laughing at it because, like, they had no idea what the letters meant.
Right.
And so, like, we can just take a moment and go through it. And so L is for lesbian, so women who have romantic or sexual attractions to women. Gay, we've already gone over that definition. A man who's attracted to men. Bisexual is a person who's attracted to either men or women. Transgender, which is somebody who is not does not identify with the with their gender that was assigned at birth. Like, I'm a cis male, which means that I am a man who identifies as being male at birth. And then queer is that kind of umbrella term that is all encompassing, that if people don't feel comfortable with any of the other terms, they can identify as queer. And that's a derogatory term that's been taken back, as now it's something of empowerment. I is something that kind of mixes people up. I stands for intersex. And intersex is the only one of the letters that has to do with biology. And intersex are people who fall outside of the XXXY chromosomes. And so here's a little fun fact for you. If you were to look at all of the people in the world, how many people do you think are redheaded? Just a percentage, throw out a number.
2%.
2%. Yeah, it's between 2 and 6%. How many people do you think in the world fall outside of the XXXY chromosomes?
I'm gonna go with 10 again.
I would say less than one. I don't know.
It's 1.7%. So
Okay.
basically, for every redheaded person that you see, there's somebody who doesn't fall into that genetically male, genetically female binary that we're so accustomed to. And
And you
so,
mean
and
on a
that can,
physical basis, like they're
on a
physical?
physical basis,
Wow.
you could have like an you could have an XY chromosome, you could have an XYY chromosome, you could be a male who has a uterus, you could be a female with internal testes. Like, it happens a lot. Like, the intersex community is massive. But yeah, and so the last letter is, well, not last one, but the next letter is A, and that stands for asexual or aromantic. And those are people who do not feel sexual attraction or romantic attraction to people. They're just living their life. And then 2S, that's two-spirited. And so the indigenous communities for thousands of years have respected people who are two-spirited. So they have both the male and the female energy. And these are people who could be any part of the community. It could be someone who identifies as male but could be a healer in the community, or they could be female and they could be a warrior. And it's just somebody who is really propped up in their community. And indigenous people have been doing two-spirited unions or marriages for thousands of years. And then it wasn't until colonialism and the white people came in and shared their religion, and that was now looked down upon. But indigenous people have been propping up the LGBT people for millennia.
Those
And
two
just as
spirit are only used by indigenous people?
it's an indigenous term,
Okay.
yes. Yeah.
I never heard that
And
before. That's a good, I like
yeah.
it. I really like that, two-spirited.
And just as we were talking about, like, that kind of hierarchy of privilege before, when you think about, like, that hierarchy of privilege, most people think men are at the top, and then women, and then others. But the LGBT acronym starts with L. It starts with women. And that wasn't until the 80s. That wasn't until the AIDS crisis, where the lesbians were the only ones who were donating blood to gay men who were dying of AIDS. And so the acronym changed from GLBT to LGBT as a respect for the women who were saving the lives and being at the bedside of the gay men who were being ostracized by community. And like that AIDS crisis that happened, that is still ongoing to this day, is wiped out an entire generation of people, wiped out an entire generation of artists and musicians and advocates and organizers, and just across the board, an entire generation of gay men was wiped out.
And you said it's still, it's funny you said that it's still running. I don't know if you didn't say rampant, but it's still very prevalent. But you don't hear, well, I'm going to speak for myself. I don't hear about it much anymore. Like I grew up in the 80s when I remember when the AIDS started, when you start first hearing about it. And I remember all the prejudice that was around about it and the awful things people would say and people, my friends would say, everybody would say. I mean, there was terrible jokes, and I remember losing a friend of mine's dad was a very well-respected surgeon, and he got AIDS from a blood transfusion. But he was then treated terribly just because he was dying of AIDS. And it didn't matter if he was gay or not gay. It didn't come into the conversation. Like people disrespected him immediately just because of that. And there was, people tried to do a lot of good work for it and did a lot of good work trying to raise money and awareness. But I remember when you would talk about movies, like when Philadelphia came out, I remember it affected a lot of people, like we didn't know any better. And then Freddie Mercury got it and died, and there was a lot of stuff. But I find lately I don't hear about it. But and I remember if me personally, I remember Magic Johnson was my favorite basketball player, and he got it. He contracted it, and I was heartbroken for him. But he got treated terribly by other players, wouldn't play with him all of a sudden. They didn't want to, it was so much bad. But I find today I don't hear about it as much anymore. But it couldn't have gone away.
Do you want to know why you haven't heard about it anymore? Because of what's in this bottle. There's a little blue pill in this bottle, and this is called pre-exposure prophylaxis. So what pre-exposure prophylaxis is it's a once a day drug where you take it if you're a high risk individual. So men who have sex with men are automatically high risk individuals, also injection drug users, sex workers, and anybody who comes in contact with bodily fluids. It's a once a day drug that's covered. Most people get it for free. And it has a 99.7% effective rate of preventing infection of HIV. And so those are the kinds of advances that have been made nowadays. And so it used to be, the brand name used to be called Truvada, but once it became generic, then the government provided a lot of subsidies for different companies, like Freddie and like the PrEP Clinic and other organizations like them, who now provide these pills basically for free. And in, I believe in the United Kingdom, there's a human trial for an injectable version of it that's about to come to Canada. So we're about to get an injectable version of that. So instead of taking it once a day, it's a once, I think, a quarter injection that you can get, and it will prevent people from getting HIV. And so that's why you're not hearing about it a lot, is because there's active measures preventing it from spreading as rampantly as it was before.
Well, that's good news. That's a positive.
Absolutely.
I hope everybody that needs it is getting it. I assume there's probably still young men that are being treated, I don't know, maybe with prejudice from their families, or they're scared to come out and ask for it, or I don't know. But I
For
hope
sure.
it's getting it. I hope. I know there's probably still a lot of struggles. So it's so great the stuff you're teaching us today. Wow. Wow. You're so open, man. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mackenzie. A couple things. Just yeah, again, very grateful for you sharing your experiences, and yeah, I think a couple of real takeaways that I have, things that really provided you a non-judgmental safe experience. Obviously, your group that you met with in Belleville, what a gift that was. you know, and I think Sean and I have talked about it in AA, you know, the feeling that you get when you go to those rooms is that real non-judgmental, you know, experience. And that's, you know, that's amazing. And, you know, even outside of that, you know, when you talk to people, as we call them, normies or civilians, Sean calls them, you don't get that. And I think that, you know, in talking about these things, you know, just what a wonderful place the world would be is if we could just feel like we feel in those rooms, if it was just like the world was just a big open room of non-judgmental, you know,
all being people. Like, how about that?
Yeah. And I guess, I think just maybe one of the questions I have, as we sort of kind of come to a conclusion, you know, I think at the root of a lot of this is kind of that, you know, feeling of self-love, right? We touched on this on a previous episode, and, you know, finding the love for yourself, because you talked about, you know, a lot of experiences with self-harm and you know, I can only assume that there's a lot of trauma in that, of course, and just being who you are and not being accepted isn't obviously an incredibly difficult experience. And but we talked about self-love, and sometimes it comes across as a little bit selfish, but it's such an important journey into finding love for yourself, you know, and finding that in a community of others that you know, love you unconditionally, is a wonderful thing. And yeah, I guess I've read the definition before, but I find it just such a beautiful message. So I just want to read it again. How do you define self-love? Self-love is a state of appreciation for oneself that grows from actions that support our physical, psychological, and spiritual growth. Self-love means having a high regard for your own well-being and happiness. Self-love means taking care of your own needs and not sacrificing your well-being to please others.
Wow.
Yeah,
I love that definition.
I read it every day, Mackenzie, because I think it's so important. I mean, we, you know, my experiences are different than Sean's experiences, are different from your experiences. But it's a journey. You know, we all had experiences in our childhood from our parents, from our friends and things that kind of took us away from that. But, you know, I think just, I mean, I really just want to say, Mackenzie, just like, I think it's really wonderful, you know, that you should love yourself for who you are, you know, just because you have different sexual preferences and different ideas, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And there, you know, there's just, it's so important. I think there's a consciousness that's coming around, and it's been swelling for a long time now. And there's more advocacy towards just not the norm. That what is the norm? And I think as we go generationally, yeah, the changes are incremental. But Gen Xers, Gen Ys, Gen Z, Millennials, you know, they're slowly moving the needle. And I just think that you know, just is super important. And just so grateful to have you here, that you love yourself for who you are, man. It was such a wonderful experience listening to you.
I hope you come back, because I could listen. I'm sure you feel the same way, Chris. I could have listened to you talk for another hour. Like, you, and the fact you're so open, and it's, that's what Chris and I have been trying to be open as well on this podcast. But I mean, it's amazing. You fit in here so perfectly with us. It's been great. I just wanted to say one thing before we stop. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Chris. I know there's so much more work to be done, I'm sure, in your community and with everybody, trying to be more accepting. But I keep thinking about when I was in school, I knew some kids that were gay. Now they weren't allowed to say it or they didn't say it. And they didn't have anywhere to go. There was nowhere. A lot of I know the couple of them that left town and never came back, never heard from them again. They were abused physically. It was just, and it was okay. I didn't do it, but you know what? I didn't do anything to stop it. I would today. I'm a different person. But I was scared. If I stood up
Absolutely.
for them, then I'd be picked on. It was just a different time. I'm so happy there's been so much growth and improvement in that area, but I know there's got to be tons more growth and improvement needed. But if we can all talk about it, I hopefully today we help maybe move the needle, or you help move the needle, I should say. We didn't really do anything except sit here, but anyway, yeah, it was so great getting to meet you. It was really, really fantastic.
Awesome. Well, thank you, gentlemen. And as I said before, like being an ally is a verb, and what you guys are doing is an action. You are giving space to a voice. I don't obviously talk for the entire community, but I talk for my experience as being part of that community. And you guys have given me an hour of time to be able to speak openly and share my story. And so this is what allyship is. And for all your listeners out there, if you're looking to do something about this, support LGBT organizations. There's organizations like EGAL Canada, that's an advocacy group, the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexual Diversity is a really great one that promotes a lot of research towards LGBT issues and gender identity and sexual orientations, as well as a really amazing organization that I came across not too long ago is called Rainbow Railroad. And what they do is they help people who are gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, or basically any other non-gender conforming individuals escape persecution and violence from their home countries. And so Rainbow Railroad is a really great place if people are looking to kind of help the community. It's for people who don't have the privilege of living in places like Canada, where we have a lot of freedom. People who are fleeing persecution and violence, Rainbow Railroad helps them get out and helps them get to countries where they can be safe and they can love who they love.
Well, I'm going to get you to send me a text or Chris later all the organizations, and I'll put them in the show notes too, so people can see
Amazing.
it there.
Yeah,
That would
we'll
be
add a
great.
link on the YouTube, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're
Yeah.
just for time wise, we probably have to wrap it up, Chris. If you
Yeah.
have any recommendations this week?
I'm gonna do my recommendation. Yeah, Mackenzie, we do a recommendation at the end of each show, something that we like to share. I actually a friend of mine recommended this. It's a podcast. It's I don't I'm not don't know if I'll get his name right. I believe it's Alok Vaid Manan. I don't know if you know him, Mackenzie.
No.
It's a podcast available. I mean, I got it on Audible, but it's 1 hour, so it's not a huge commitment. And the title is Beyond the Gender Binary.
Oh,
It's
cool.
a wonderful insight into his experience. He offers great information, just his take on how his life has been growing up as a non-binary individual in New York City. And it's really, really informative. I highly recommend listening to it. So it's Alok Vaid Manan, and it's called Beyond the Gender Binary.
Awesome.
I love that.
I'll check that out. I'm going to recommend a book that I've read many times, I've had for years. It's called The Four Agreements. And I have the Four Agreements companion book.
Oh, nice.
It's by Don Miguel Ríos. And it's basically, I'll do it quickly. It just says a practical guide to personal freedom. So the first agreement is be impeccable with your word. The second agreement is don't take anything personally. The third is don't make assumptions. And the fourth is always do your best. And it's been a big help to me. My dad got me into it years ago. And I'm not saying I agree with every single thing in it, but again, it's a great book if someone ever wants to check it out. It's not a hard read, it's not a long read. It's the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. So
Great. Thank you.
Recommend that. Okay, well, we're gonna say goodbye. Thanks again, Mackenzie.
Thank you so much.
And love you, Chris. Great seeing you as always.
Me too, Sean.
And
Love you too, Mackenzie. Love you, man.
thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, and like I said, I hope hope we get to I hope I get to see you again. All right.
Absolutely. Invite me back anytime.
Oh,
we
Absolutely.
will do.
Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday.
All right. Peace.
Love you guys. Bye.
Love you too.